are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
The vision for me is walking around and not having girls feel the need to compare themselves to other people.
Mm-hmm. We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Ayo Awotono, author and educational speaker. Ayo works with girls and young women to improve their self-esteem and create positive self-worth. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are self-esteem in young girls, spiritual journeys, and practical solutions for improving diversity and representation in schools.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk, at the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am interviewing Ayo Awotono. Is that how I pronounce your name, Ayo?
It's actually Ayo Awotono.
And is that Ghanaian or Nigerian, West African?
Nigerian, West African.
Nigerian. Now, I actually went to go and work in Nigeria.
Did you?
Yeah, a long time ago. Now, it's not about me, this podcast is about you, so I should know how to pronounce accurately your name. But we met about a year ago, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And so it's good to reconnect. And I want you to just briefly just introduce your yourself to my listeners and tell everybody what you do day to day.
Awesome. So my name is Ayo Awotono. And what I do is I'm an educational speaker. I work with girls and young women. And it's all about bridging that gap between low self-esteem and positive self-worth. And the mission really is just to help them become more confident in who they are. And I do that by means of creating digital content, delivering workshops in schools, and also leadership training. I'm also an author. Recently became a self-published author.
Congratulations. So let's talk about your book quickly. What's the book called?
So it's called A Young Woman's Guide to Seeking God. And I got the vision for the book on the 7th of January 2019. And I released it. I had a physical copy of it on my birthday on the 18th of August 2019.
Right, fantastic. And people signing up and buying copies?
Honestly, I was absolutely shocked. By the end of September, about 400 copies of the book had gone.
Right, brilliant. And, yeah. You know, I'm a Christian chap. I grew up in the Salvation Army my life. Tell me your relationship with God and your work, with the spiritual life, so to speak.
Yeah. Okay. So to sum it up, I've got a lot more information in the book. So you can get the book. And this is not a sales bid, by the way, but just to let you know.
It is. Let's sell the book.
Genuinely, there's a lot of info in the book because I share my story in there, which the book is available on my website, which Ross, you can put down below and all of that stuff. But in a nutshell, in 2017, I grew up in a Christian home. But the only thing is, like, it's one thing being a follower of Christ and another thing just saying you're a Christian because you've grown up that way.
Sure.
So I kind of just like grew up in church and stuff. And then I got to an age where when I was in secondary school, I was like, actually, do you know what? Yeah, don't really care for this sort of thing. So I sort of like went astray, didn't go to church for many, many years. And then in 2017, I started going to this small church, and then I kind of like sort of had a bit of interest to start going to church again, but it was nothing serious. And then at the end of 2017, New Year's Eve to be specific, I had this urge to go to my family church, which is a church in Northwest London. And that day, the pastor in the church, he made an altar call, which is basically saying, if you want to take God seriously and you want to...
Yes, I remember the mercy seat myself. It's mercy seat in the Salvation Army.
Right. So he made an altar call and he was like, if you want to take God seriously and if you want to improve your relationship with God, come forward. And there was this voice inside of me saying, I need you to stop being 50-50.
Sure.
I need
with the book, I guess there's a lot more depth in there in terms of your spiritual journey. What do you hope the legacy of the book will be?
The legacy of the book will be empowering young women to actually seek God for themselves and basically understand who they are in God. Okay. And that their identity is based in God and not of things of the world that are forever changing.
And What connections are there in the book to your day-to-day work today?
So day-to-day work. So, I would say the connections are like identity and understanding like who you are as a person.
Yeah.
And also a lot of like relatability. So I think a lot of the times a lot of people think that this whole Christian thing and like it's really complicated. So I would say day-to-day, like I seek to be like a very relatable, down-to-earth person and just seek to understand. And the book also is very like relatable to the younger generation, so I would say they go hand in hand in some way.
Mm-hmm.
And just being really honest at the fact that I've come to realize that for me, getting closer to God has been the best thing I decided to do.
Fantastic. Can I take you back to your school childhood time?
Yeah.
Could you just give listeners a quick synopsis of your kind of school journey?
School journey from secondary or primary?
Let's go back a bit further. Primary, your own, you know, your upbringing.
Okay, so I was born in the UK, and after year six, my parents had told me that I was going to go to secondary school in Nigeria, a boarding school.
Oh, right, okay.
And yeah, their reasoning for that was just that they wanted us to get a really good education.
Whereabouts in Nigeria?
Lagos.
Okay.
Yeah, so they wanted us to get a really good education and, like, it was really, really important for them. So they sent us to one of the top private schools in Nigeria, and it was pretty challenging. So I would say, going back to primary school. Primary school was cool. I mean, I enjoyed primary school. Secondary school was a challenge because I was going to a whole new city, yes. A whole new environment, and not being with my parents anymore. So that was a challenge.
Was it overall, to get that discipline in you? That old West African mantra, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, like, I didn't appreciate it so much at the time, but now I couldn't even be more grateful because I have the best of both worlds, having lived in Nigeria for 5 years in secondary school and now being here in the UK. And with regards to the work I'm doing, I've actually been back to Nigeria twice to speak in schools in Nigeria, and I can relate to the girls on a different level now because I was once there. So many other benefits.
Yeah, nice. I see your pictures there and things and in your newsletters. Okay, so after secondary school, what happened then?
So after secondary school, I came back to the UK and I had failed my GCSEs. Uh-huh. So I had to do my GCSEs again, failed them again, did them for the third time, failed, and then I finally passed my GCSEs. And then at that point, after GCSEs, you're supposed to go to do A-levels or a BTEC national. But then I had realised the 2 years after secondary school, where I was supposedly supposed to be doing A-levels or a BTEC national, those are the 2 years I had spent retaking GCSEs.
Right.
So then I didn't want to be in college for another 2 years doing A-levels or a BTEC national. I really wanted to go to uni. So I just took a bold step and I decided to apply to so many different universities all over the UK, rejection after rejection. And then there was just one university that was like, yeah, sure, and we'll take you if you do a foundation year. And that was Goldsmiths University of London.
Yay, so I went to Goldsmiths. Fantastic.
Did you? Yes. Oh, amazing. So Goldsmiths took me in and did a foundation year, got a 2-1. Then I did a degree in computer science. And brilliant. I graduated with a 2-1 overall and got a first in my dissertation.
I knew there's a reason why I love Goldsmiths. So you did your degree, you got 2-1. And what year was this approximately?
I graduated in 2015. So I started in 2011, graduated 2015.
And now you're, I know you've kind of self-taught yourself Spanish, you travel around the world, you've written your own book, you're speaking with hundreds and thousands of kids every year. Tell me about your day-to-day work in schools.
Day-to-day work in schools. Okay, so day-to-day work in schools is delivering workshops and assemblies. And this year, we're in 2020 now, last year, yeah. I did a lot of inset days and leadership training for staff as well. Great. So in terms of what that looks like, let's just say, for an example, I have a program called I Am Enough, which is basically as it says in the title, like getting girls to understand that they are enough. So I have that in a 1-day version. I also have that in a 6-week version.
Uh-huh.
So that could be a 6-week mentoring program, or it could just be going in for the day where it's like a series of 1-hour workshops throughout the day. Sure. And it's just really practical for the girls, just getting them to build their confidence and stuff. And where the leadership training comes in, it's more so to empower teachers and practical ways in which they can empower their girls to be more confident. And so that's it in a nutshell, day to day.
Yeah. And so with the work that you do, what's the kind of change that you're looking for at that kind of level with kids and with teachers in schools?
Yeah.
What's the vision?
The vision for me is walking around and not having girls feel the need to compare themselves to other people.
Mm-hmm.
The vision for me looks like girls being on social media and not feeling like they need to be helped.
So how achievable is this in a world where, you know, with social media now, we're all seeing people tweet and like and retweet things and websites here and there. It's very difficult to avoid, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, I would agree and say it's difficult, but I don't think it's impossible. I mean, initially, I didn't want to do this because I thought, oh no, this is just too big a task. But then when I do work in schools and I do work with smaller groups, and then a year later I get messages and DMs from the girls I've worked with, and they've said, oh, I'll because of your program this has happened, it gives me hope. So yes, I'm not saying that I'm going to change everyone's life in the next 1 year and everyone's going to be transformed, but it's just planting. I see myself as a seed planter. So when I first started, it was all about the immediate results. And yes, I want to inspire, I want to motivate, and they have to be transformed today. But now I realize that no, that transformation can come a year later, and it's just me being patient and diligent
I guess on that analogy, have you got enough seeds, and where do you see where there's opportunities for the water to feed the kind of initial thoughts that you're planting?
Say that again, sorry.
So over the next 5 years, as you plant and see all these seeds evolve alongside your kind of vision for, you know, supporting girls and throughout their education and the social media evolution moving very rapidly in the next 5 years, where do you think you'll be in the next, where's the kind of hopes for you for the next 3-5 years?
That's definitely a very good question, because I'm currently in the process of building a social enterprise. So I do not have all the answers. Mm-hmm. I do not know what that's going to look like. But on a high level, I would say, high level overview, I would say it looks like training programs, self-development, and it's definitely a lot bigger than me. Mm-hmm. I'm just starting this, but by the grace of God, like, I will have loads of people working with me, and we'll be doing this together. And it's definitely a long-term thing as opposed to just me.
What's your favorite part of working with kids and teachers in schools?
I would say the favorite part, the best part for me, is the fulfillment that comes from knowing that I'm making someone a difference in someone else's life.
And you'd work around the world, so I know you're over in Nigeria sometimes. Where else has your work taken you?
So it's taken me to El Salvador.
Yeah.
And it's taken me to, I had a conference that I spoke at virtually in America, at a women's conference.
Great.
And so far, those are the countries predominantly in the UK, all over the nation at the moment, Nigeria, El Salvador, and America.
Fantastic. Now, I want to move on to diversity, ethnicity, racism, those types of things. And, you know, me being a white male, I'll be very conscious of my own bias and things like that. But I'd really like us to push on some solutions rather than things that we know are already prevalent. So can I just get your immediate thoughts on, let's just look at diversity in the workplace as a starting point, first of all. What are your thoughts?
There definitely needs to be more.
So are there any kind of practical solutions you'd say for whether it's getting into university, for girls at school, or in leadership positions, or perhaps women in your context working as social entrepreneurs?
Ask me the question one more time, because my mind just went in so many different places.
Okay, so give me a solution for improving diversity in the workplace.
Are we talking education or the workplace?
Let's come back a bit. What challenges have you faced?
So challenges I've faced are being in the workplace as a young black woman. I've faced feeling like I need to conform because there's something wrong with my race.
Mm-hmm.
And I've faced challenges like not feeling confident enough to wear my natural curly hair because it's not neat enough, for example. And it's not overtly said that, oh, your hair isn't neat enough, but it's the looks that you might get.
So I remember talking about this at the BAMED last year.
Yeah.
And I found it fascinating, particularly with a man with shaven hair, and actually working with Michelle De Leon and hearing her talk about Afro hair and actually the perceptions of men with bald hair. I thought, well, God, I've faced a lot of those fears myself, who's actually chosen to shave his hair off. So if we come on to racism and things like that, now, I don't know if you want to talk about any particular issues yourself, but I'm sure you've worked with lots of students who have also perhaps faced racism early on as a young girl, perhaps in school. Any thoughts on the issues?
Well, that's a really deep topic, Ross.
What could schools do to tackle it better?
I think being very mindful of the let's look at this from two ends. Okay, so let's just say we have a school that's with a lot of a mix of black, white, Asian, different races, for example. I think being very mindful of the type of people that are maybe working in the school or maybe invited to speak in the school, because, for example, I've had girls come up to me in diverse schools and say, oh my goodness, we've never had a black female speaker before.
Right, exactly.
And they're in year 11. Yes. So you mean to tell me for 5 years you've never, that for me is very shocking. And that's another thing that gives me fuel, I guess, to carry on doing what I'm doing, to be an example, to say, actually, you can do this too.
What practical suggestion could you offer school leadership teams to be aware of their diversity radar when...
Yeah.
Bringing in people, how can they perhaps tackle it more equitably?
Well, we've got amazing platforms like BAMED, and we've also got Women Ed, and we've also got school speakers, and there are a range of diverse speakers on those profiles. So say, for example, just utilizing platforms like those two, for example, and actually saying, actually, do you know what, we've got a diverse range of students in the school. Let me basically maybe see if we could invite a different range of speakers to come in, for example, just to cater to different needs. That's one example. And also even in the interviewing process for staff, I'm not a teacher, so I don't know the ins and outs of the process. And I understand that it's dependent on who applies, but maybe even just going somewhere else to find different teachers, maybe, for example.
Well, so I would say, you know, having now crossed into the kind of business world, the whole application process is very sporadic in lots of places.
Because,
you know, you put your name in an application form, I put my name on an application form, or on a CV, you submit your photograph and I don't. There's already bias being influenced by the shortlisting people or not. So it's very mixed and very complicated. And I think as a society, we must do better.
Definitely. And also, Ross, just to go back really quickly. So I know I spoke about a school that maybe had a diverse set of students, but let's go on. Let's look at the other side. If Nate, say, for example, we just had a school that didn't have a diverse pool of students and maybe it was a predominantly white based school.
Yes.
I still think in that instance, the same principles could apply where, you know, we are getting a different
different voice. Yeah.
Exactly. So it works on both sides.
Yeah. No, absolutely. It's really important. Yeah. So I think I'm sure you do, traveling across the UK, you can really see very stark differences in pupil and teaching staff populations.
Yeah.
For, you know, historical reasons, population reasons. But as we know, the UK is an incredibly diverse place. There's no excuse today. one last question on females. Now, I wouldn't say you're necessarily, I guess you got quite a kind of unique set of topics within your work. If we if we consider being a female in your industry and maybe a black female in your industry, what are the immediate challenges, or are they similar to the other things that we've already discussed?
Immediate challenges, yeah, I would definitely say similar to what we've already discussed, but then also I would say just from a female's perspective of where I was 2 years ago when I started, well, almost 3 years ago when I started, and where I am today.
Yeah,
I think confidence and actually knowing what it is that you bring to the table is really important. So if you don't have a solution and you don't have anything to bring to the table, then it's hard for you to kind of carry yourself in a way that's like confident. But if you do have a solution, then
so I'm you know, we all get setbacks and knockbacks and things, and some more than others. I'm sure you've had your fair share also, and perhaps, you know, with a diversity race umbrella, it's going to be even more challenging. But what tips could you offer to other listeners in terms of, you know, someone maybe seeing what you're doing, your contributions, or maybe younger listeners who are listening, looking to see what you're doing? What top tips from your lessons learned would you offer in a piece of wisdom?
Really, really simple. It's not about you. It's about who you're there to serve.
Great. Okay, so I'm going to throw loads of quick fire questions at you to keep you on your toes. I know it's evening for us as we record this. okay. So give me a project that you're working on in your work today.
Writing a business plan.
Okay, and that's not an easy feat. Okay, what's your personal project at home with family outside of work?
Cooking more often for the house.
Okay, favorite dish? What's your specialist dish?
Oh, I would say my sweet potato shepherd's pie.
Okay, and is there a Nigerian speciality that features any time?
Yes, jollof rice.
Okay, of course. I never was a fan of yam yam, actually. it's kind of the type of potato, isn't it? From memory.
Yeah, it's like yam and like, yeah.
So I was in Nigeria in 96. That's a long time ago. I'm sure it's changed significantly in that time. What would be your piece of advice for a young female wanting to get into your field of work? Kind of starting point. What first? Website, books, writing, speaking, practice?
Website, to make it really, really clear on the services you offer.
And do you manage your website yourself?
I do, yeah.
Okay, and what's your biggest challenge with the website?
Keeping it up to date.
Yeah, I know that feeling very well. So if you weren't doing what you're doing, and I'm going to assume you are doing your dream job, but if you could do anything and a fairy godmother appointed a wish and all the money you needed, what would it be?
I'd be a dancer. Right. Definitely.
Fantastic. Okay. What's your biggest achievement to date that you're most proud of?
Writing a book in 5 months.
Right. Brilliant. And who would you recommend I interview next and why?
Oh, that's such a tough question. I'm not sure, Ross. I'm really not sure.
Right, well, you have to ping me an answer later and I'll stick it on the podcast for everybody. Okay. So just to finish off, gravestone legacy, what would it say?
She was a woman who loved and served others with all she had.
Fantastic. And the occasional dance and the great cooking.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that too.
Okay. Where can listeners find out more about you? Books, blogs, those types of things.
So my website is website, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. I'm Ayo Awotono. And I am also on YouTube as well.
Is this a new venture?
No, I've been on YouTube. I started a YouTube channel 2 years ago and I took a break because I wasn't sure of the direction I was going in, but God gave me vision about a few days ago. So I'm coming back on very soon. I haven't got a date yet, but it's definitely within the next 2 months. So we're recording this in January. Definitely be by March.
Right, excellent. So, I mean, I'm browsing your website as we chat, and it's lovely and clean. It's got a great little brand, some beautiful images on there. So we'll definitely put all the links. Ayo, it's been a fantastic conversation. Very broad. I wish you all the luck, and I'm gutted I'm going to miss the BAMED event. So please say hello on my behalf.
I will do. I'll take loads of pictures and text
on
Twitter.
Equally challenging solo, trying to save the world and do right. And thank you for your precious time to chat with me on a late working week night. And I wish you all the best. And hope to see you soon.
Thank you for your time. Thank you. Bye. Thank
you. God bless. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.